Welcome once again to the 15th in our series, Salvation History. The Old Testament, the story of creation, fall, and the beginning of the redemption of all humankind. Our guest again is Ron Eldred, who is our wonderful teacher of religion and history at John Paul II Catholic High. I'm your host, Father Larry Moran, the chaplain down at the Carmelite Monastery at the entrance to Allendale, just south of Terre Haute. Ron, welcome once again. And in our story of how God is preparing for salvation and coming of the Messiah, that's why it's called the history of salvation, we got down to Moses and Aaron confronting Pharaoh and then the plagues that come about. So how did Pharaoh reply to the plagues?
He didn't pay much attention to the first two plagues because his court magicians could produce something that resembled them. However, the magicians failed to produce the third plague, the plague of gnats, and even they admitted that this is the finger of God. Nonetheless, Pharaoh still wouldn't give in. In other words, give in to letting Moses go out into the wilderness. It's only for 3 days now. It still hasn't requested, leaving the land yet, to take the people out 3 days to worship and to make sacrifices and then come back to Egypt. So he wouldn't give in. So God inflicted the fourth plague on Egypt, the swarming of countless flies. And this, of course, made it more evident that it was the Israelite God who was causing the plague, especially since the flies covered all of Egypt, except for that part of Egypt where the Israelites were mostly living in Goshen, the land of Goshen, which is up in the northeastern corner of in the delta region of the Nile.
That the previous Pharaoh had given to Joseph and his family.
Yes, by Pharaoh during the time of Joseph, 400 years before. In fact, only the Egyptians were afflicted by all of the plagues.
Okay, well, why did God inflict these particular plagues on Egypt, or do we know?
Each of the plagues represented a refutation of an Egyptian god. And many scientists have pointed out that each of the plagues can be explained as a natural phenomenon in Egypt. And that might be so, but it's not likely that all of them would have occurred in a relatively short period of time and in direct response to Moses' command, unless God orchestrated the entire series of events. Moreover, God ordinarily works through natural processes to accomplish his will. The plagues were God's judgments on the gods of Egypt. For example, the Egyptians worshipped the Nile as a god, Hapi. Therefore, God turned its water to blood, or at least turned it red. Moreover, the Egyptians worshipped the bull, Apis. Therefore, God brought a plague on their cattle. Also, the Egyptians worshipped the frog. So God sent them so many frogs that, in the words of one scripture scholar, they had to be shoveled. And to stinking piles of dead Egyptian gods. And after each plague, Pharaoh seemed willing to grant Moses' request as the plagues get more and more severe.
Okay.
But as soon as Moses asked God to end the plague, Pharaoh would change his mind and refuse to let the Israelites leave Egypt. The Bible in some places says his heart was hardened.
Now, tough question. How could these miracles possibly be explained away as natural events?
I've seen a number of TV programs the past few years in which some science writers and biblical scholars have suggested that the plagues were the result of ordinary natural disasters and not supernatural miracles. Well, let's go down through these and take a look at them. Plague number one, the Nile turning into blood. How has that been explained in a natural way? The redness in the Nile could have actually been pollution caused by volcanic activity. That's one explanation you hear. Specifically that of Thera, known today as Santorini. I've seen some programs on this particular volcanic explosion, which erupted around 1500 BC and whose ashes found in the Nile region. The silt could make the Nile turn red, blood red, and make the water undrinkable. Another explanation given is that heavy rains in the red-soiled area of Lake Victoria, way up, way south in Africa, where the Nile, the headwaters of the Nile River are located, that they could have caused the water to be reddened and to wash, to wash downstream. As for fish dying, it has been proposed that a red toxic algae bloom called red tide could have produced large quantities of toxins that could kill fish. I don't know what my Aunt Bonnie would have thought of this hypothesis, because she was, until her death, was one of the world's leading experts on the red tide.
Really?
Yeah, she's an ichthyologist, but lived in Florida. But the red tide, can be very dangerous, and it kills a lot of sea life.
Okay. Well, what about the frogs?
Well, according to this view, any blight on the water that killed fish also would have killed frogs, or at least caused them to leave the river and then, of course, along the banks and by the millions or the billions to probably die.
Well, how about 3 and 4, biting insects and flies?
Well, the absence of frogs in the river would have let insect populations, normally kept in check by the frogs, to increase substantially. At least that's the natural explanation that people try to give. And then we go on to plagues 5 and 6, livestock diseases and boils. And since there are so many flies that bite in this area, they could or would easily transmit livestock diseases and cause various kinds of epidemics, which could result in, livestock disease and people getting boils and what have you.
Okay. Well, how about the fiery hail?
The 7th plague? Well, it has been suggested that when Santorini, this great huge volcano to the north of there across the Mediterranean Sea, it was in Greece, when it erupted, it not only spewed ash into the atmosphere, but also brimstone, and that it also altered the weather system, which produced hail. It has also been hypothesized that hail could have been a completely independent natural weather event, which was accomplished by lightning as the fire. Those are just different proposals.
Sure, explanations, hypotheses.
Yes.
Well, what about the locusts? The locusts are traditional enemies of mankind.
It's one of the scourges of history. According to this hypothesis, the hail could have destroyed most crops, leaving several varieties of insects and other animals without a normal food source. And this could trigger the formation of large swarms of locusts, which would destroy the remaining crops. And an alternative explanation is that the locusts could have increased because of a lack of predators. Then we go on to the plague 9, darkness. Several explanations have been put forth to try to explain this event. For example, a solar eclipse, or a sandstorm, volcanic ash, or simply swarms of locusts large enough to block out the sun. These have all been proposed as different scientific, answers, as to what caused the darkness. And then, of course, the 10th plague is the death of the firstborn.
Okay. Well, how do they explain that? The death of the firstborn. Oh, we're going to get into that, all right. Tell us more then about the Santorini eruption, this volcanic eruption that is commonly known about.
Santorini is a Greek island. If, in fact, the Santorini eruption happened around 1500 B.C., it is one of the largest eruptions on the record, rivaling that of Tambora on Indonesia, which resulted in the year without a summer in 1816. The Santorini explosion had enormous global impact. because scientists have discovered an ash layer deposit found not only in the Nile Delta, which is about 650 miles to the southeast of Santorini, across the Mediterranean, but also frost scars on trees, rings, and the bristlecone pines of the western United States, and a coating of ash in the Greenland ice caps. According to one source, all of these discoveries have been dated to the same time and with the same chemical fingerprint as the ash from Santorini.
Okay, it isn't hard to see how miracles could be given a natural explanation. But how about the 10th one, the death of the firstborn?
Even natural explanations have been offered for this one. According to one hypothesis, if the last plague indeed selectively tended to affect the firstborn, it could be due to food polluted during the time of darkness, either by locusts or by black mold. When people emerged after the darkness, the firstborn would be given priority, as was usual, and would consequently be more likely to be affected by any toxin or disease carried by the food. Meanwhile, the Israelites ate food prepared and eaten very quickly, which would have made it less likely to be infected. Another hypothesis has been posed by Jewish-Canadian filmmaker Shimka Jakubovici in his 2006 documentary, Exodus Decoded. I've seen that program several times. And he's produced a lot of programs, in fact, and I think they're all pretty interesting. He hypothesized that the selectiveness of the 10th plague was under the circumstances similar to the 1986 disaster at Lake Nyos.
Well, what was the disaster at Lake Nyos?
I've seen some other programs about this, at least two or three, not put on by him, in some of the documentary channels. Lake Nyos is a deep crater lake in the Cameroon. That's one of the countries in Africa. And this lake is adjacent to an inactive volcano. And a pocket of magma lies beneath the lake that leaks carbon dioxide into the water, changing it into carbonic acid. The pocket of gas is kept down at the bottom of the lake by the weight of the water. In other words, the gas is leaking, you know, up into the water way down. It's real deep, 2,000-3,000 feet deep lake. And the pocket is simply saturated with carbon dioxide coming, you know, from the volcanic emission. And, of course, this can be deadly to humans and animals as well. On the night of August the 21st, 1986, it is believed that a landslide triggered a huge emission of carbon dioxide from the pocket of trapped gas to the surface of the lake in a large cloud, which drifted over the edge of the lake to nearby villages, suffocating over 1,700 people, killing over 1,700 people and 3,500 livestock. There was another lake where something like that similarly had happened, in a volcanic lake in Africa. According to the documentary, the eruption sets off a chain of events that resulted in the plagues, and eventually the killing of the firstborn. He offers an explanation for all of the plagues, but the 10th is the most interesting, that is, the death of the firstborn Egyptians. He believes that the firstborns in ancient Egyptian had the privilege to sleep on the ground floor, whereas younger children slept on higher floors and even on roofs. Carbon dioxide would have seeped to the surface. And his view, however, is not supported by any archaeological or historical evidence. He argues that in Lake Nyos, carbon dioxide or other toxic gases escaped the surface tension of the Nile River, possibly as the result of an earthquake, causing the carbon dioxide to erupt to the surface and being heavier than air, displacing the oxygen and killing those who were in its path. Before it dissipated harmlessly into the atmosphere. He maintains that Jewish households could have escaped this fate because they were involved in their first Passover rituals. In other words, he's saying that somehow gas got built underneath the Nile, and then an earthquake or something of that sort let this gas come up through some kind of volcanic vents or something like that underneath the Nile and escaped into the air and then spread across, all across Egypt. It keeps low, you see. It's heavier than air. It stays low, and it seeps in to the households of the Egyptians along the each side of the Nile River. Well, historians and scientists alike have challenged his claim that the Egyptian firstborn deaths were caused by asphyxiation by carbon dioxide inhalation. They point out that there is a significant difference between the still waters of Lake Nyos and the moving waters of the Nile River, which makes a lot of sense to me. Carbon dioxide would not have easily accumulated in a moving body of water such as that of a river. As far as the sleeping arrangements described by that he describes, that is, that the firstborn slept on the first floor, this was a place of honor instead of having to sleep up on the second floor or on the roof. A critic claimed that there's no historical or archaeological proof of this happening. And as I said at the beginning of this discussion, even though many scientists have pointed out that the 10 plagues can be explained as natural phenomena in Egypt, it's not likely that all of these would have occurred in a relatively short period of time and in direct response to Moses' command, unless God orchestrated the entire series of events. Moreover, as I said, God ordinarily works through natural processes to accomplish his will.
I think that's a really important point to stress, that God does work through natural causes to bring about his will. We'll go into that a little bit more later, but since it's so important to the story, tell us more about the 10th plague, the Passover of the Angel of Death, which is commemorated every year in the Passover celebration of the Orthodox Jews.
Moses had earlier warned Pharaoh that the Lord had said that Israel was his firstborn son, and that, quote, if you refuse to let him go, that is Israel, his firstborn son, behold, I will slay your firstborn son. That ends the quote. The king had refused to allow the Israelites to leave Egypt, even after 9 plagues. So now the time had come for God to carry out that threat. God said to Moses, quote, yet one plague more, and I will bring upon Pharaoh and upon Egypt. Afterwards, he will let you go hence. When he lets you go, he will drive you away completely. Speak now in the hearing of the people, that they ask every man of his neighbor and every woman of her neighbor, jewelry of silver and gold. In other words, what God is telling Moses to do is go out and tell the Israelites to ask the Egyptians for silver and gold, which they did. They gathered a lot of it. Later on, of course, they were using it in a very bad way when they milled it down, a good part of it, and built a golden calf, but we'll get to that story later. And the Lord gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. Moreover, the man Moses was very great in the land of Egypt, in the sight of Pharaoh's servants, in the sight of people. That's in Genesis 11. Then Moses said, thus saith the Lord, about midnight, I will go forth in the midst of Egypt, and all the firstborn of the land of Egypt shall die, and the firstborn of Pharaoh, who sits upon his throne, even to the firstborn of the maidservant, who is behind the mill, and all the firstborn of the cattle. And there shall be a great cry throughout all the land of Egypt, such as there has never been, nor ever will be again. But against any of the people of Israel, either man or beast, not a dog, shall growl, that you may know that the Lord makes a distinction between Egyptians and Israel. Then the Lord said to Moses, Pharaoh will not listen to you, that my wonders may be multiplied in the land of Egypt. Moses and Aaron did all these wonders before Pharaoh, and the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he did not let the people go, the people of Israel, go out of the land. Scott Hahn states in this regard to the killing of the firstborn animals, quote, once again, by killing the animals, God would symbolically slaughter the gods of Egypt, especially the bull, the calf, the Apis, A-P-I-S. That was one of their main gods. And we'll find out later on, that that's one of the reasons that God selected the bulls for the sacrifice of the Israelites throughout the history.
Okay. Tell us how God kept his promise to Moses and the Israelites about this 10th plague.
In this regard, the book of Exodus says that, quote, "At midnight the Lord smote all of the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sat on his throne to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of the cattle. Pharaoh rose up in the night, he and all of his servants and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where one was not dead. And he summoned Moses and Aaron by night and said, Rise up, go forth from among my people, both you and the people of Israel, and go, serve the Lord as you have said. Take your flocks and your herds as you have said, and be gone, and bless me also." End of quote. Because they had caused them so much grief, the Egyptian people were so eager to get the Israelites out of their land that they complied with Moses' demand that they give the Israelites gold and silver jewelry and clothing and things of that sort.
Okay, tell us how the firstborn sons of the Israelites were spared when the angel of death passed over Egypt.
God provided a way for the people of Israel to save their firstborn sons. He said to Moses and Aaron, quote, "This month shall be for you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year for you. Tell all the congregation of Israel that on the 10th day of this month they shall take every man a lamb according to their father's houses, a lamb for a household. And if the household be too small for a lamb, then a man and his neighbor next to his house shall take according to the number of persons. According to what each can eat, you shall make your count for the lamb. Your lamb shall be without blemish." This is very important. "A male of a year old. You shall take it from the sheep or from the goats, and you shall keep it until the 14th day of this month, when the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill their lambs in the evening, and you shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and on the lintel of the houses in which they eat them." The lintel, of course, is the top of the door. "They shall eat the flesh that night, roasted, and with unleavened bread and bitter herbs they shall eat it. Do not take any of it, raw or boiled with water, but roasted, its head with its legs and its inner parts. And you shall let none of it remain until the evening. Anything that remains upon the morning you shall burn. In this manner you shall eat it, your loins girded, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand, and you shall eat it in haste." See, in other words, they're supposed to be dressed and ready to go real early the next morning when Pharaoh gives them the word to go, when Moses gives them the word to go. "It is the Lord's Passover, for I will pass through the land of Egypt that night, and I will smite all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgments. I am the Lord. The blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and no plague shall fall upon you to destroy you when I smite the land of Egypt." This story, of course, is told in Exodus 12.
Okay, now this is not just something in history, but still goes on today faithfully among the Orthodox Israelites or Jewish people. What did God order the Israelites about continuing this Passover forever?
Yes, certainly God did order Moses to continue that till the end of time, I guess. "This shall be for you a memorial day," I'm quoting again here, "and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord. Throughout your generations you'll observe it as an ordinance forever. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall put away leaven out of your houses. For if anyone eats what is leavened," leaven means, of course, with yeast to make it rise, "from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. On the first day you shall hold a holy assembly. and on the seventh day a holy assembly. No work shall be done on those days, but what every one must eat, that only may be prepared by you, and you shall observe the feast of unleavened bread. For on this very day I brought your host out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall observe this day throughout your generations as an ordinance forever. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread, and so until the 21st day of the month at evening. For 7 days no leaven shall be found in your houses. For if anyone eats what is leavened, that person shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he is a sojourner or a native of the land. You shall eat nothing leavened. In all of your dwellings you shall eat unleavened bread. This story is told in Genesis 12 and 13. And observance of the Passover was still customary in Jesus' time. In fact, Jesus, of course, was saying the Passover meal, what they would call the Seder Supper today, at the Last Supper. In fact, he's actually taking the place of the Passover lamb, as we know, in our Catholic teachings.
So the Passover Supper is turned into the Last Supper, and this becomes the Eucharistic mystery that we celebrate down through space and time. Okay, Passover lamb is a type of Christ.
Yes, you have said, as we have said, or it has been said, that the Passover lamb is a type of Christ. And this is what John the Baptist meant when he saw Jesus coming toward him after the 40 days after he had baptized him. Behold, the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. And of course, we Catholics believe that Jesus took the place of the Passover lamb at Calvary, which is made present at every holy sacrifice of the Mass. Therefore, each time we celebrate Mass, we are participating in the Passover. The covenant God made with the Israelites was ratified or sealed by the sacrifice of animals, whereas the new and everlasting covenant is ratified or sealed with the blood of Jesus. And it is significant that the moment that Jesus was nailed to the cross at noon, that the priests in the nearby temple started to slaughter the lambs for the Passover sacrifices. Scott Hahn says of this matter, quote, "The Passover was more than a deliverance from the bondage in Egypt. The blood of the Passover lamb sprinkled on the doorposts to save the firstborn sons of Israel from immediate death was a type of the blood of Christ, who by his blood saved us from eternal death. By celebrating the Passover every year, the people of God would be preparing themselves to understand the death of the Lamb of God." End of quote.
Okay, Ron, I'm sorry our time has run out. And to our listening audience, we say may God bless you all, always and in all ways.